Oh, you know what that music means? It means it's 4:30 on a Tuesday, and the Stanley Cup Final is over, and Trevor Maddich is with us in studio, ESPN college football analyst. Trevor, what's up, brother?
I still refuse to believe that the Stanley Cup Final is over. There must be an appeal.
You thought it was a bad call.
Well, yeah, listen, losing that goal earlier in the game, that was a terrible call.
Bad goal.
The official blew the whistle too fast. That's like in football, college and NFL. But if you look at college football, officials are told that if there's a turnover about to happen, for example, if a quarterback's hitting the pocket, and if the official is not quite certain whether or not the arm was coming forward to make it an incomplete pass, or it wasn't coming forward, in which case it would be a fumble, let it play out and let replay handle it. Because
right.
if you blow the whistle immediately, then you can still have the defensive team can still have a continuation and jump on the ball, but maybe they would have a scoop and score that you would take off the board. That's exactly what happened to the Predators. The official blew the whistle too early. And that, to me, is a mental mistake by the official, not just a judgment mistake.
Oh, and he was out of position.
It was. But then all the more reason to not blow the whistle. But I'll tell you what, up until a minute 38 to go, whatever it was, they looked like the better team, didn't they? I mean, I could see where Nick Saban would like watching that team. I mean, that Predators team was relentless and just focused, and it was just amazing the way they were playing ball.
Every Preds
hockey,
fan,
I call it ball.
Every Preds fan who has, spent the better part of the last 2 weeks trying to move on, has now had that wound opened up from Game 6 by our very own Trevor Maddich. But
yeah, you're welcome.
But speaking of maybe healing old wounds, Philip Fulmer is returning to UT. Is a special advisor to the president, but essentially as a baby kisser is what I call it. You know,
a baby kisser?
A baby kisser.
Any particular part of the baby or just general baby kisser?
The forehead.
Okay.
And as you know, they go out to the UT Rotary Club picnic luncheon, and here comes Philip Fulmer, and he's going to ask you for $200,000. And I that's fine, and I'm glad that Fulmer is back with the university, but I believe Philip Fulmer needs to have a role inside of the football part of it, maybe as a special assistant to the coach or special advisor. I don't know, but the way I kind of want it all laid out is I want him to be there for Butch Jones if Butch Jones needs him. I want him to be there if Butch Jones has any questions. I want him to be there to help Butch Jones. I want him to be there on Monday talking to Butch and keeping Champions of Life from happening. I just don't think it's going to be what they're going to use Fulmer for.
That's kind of what got Tommy Bowden bounced out of Clemson so many years ago. Different specifics, but same kind of concept. I disagree with you, Jared. I think having Fulmer around is great. I think if they would have hired him as the athletic director, it would have been excellent. But to have him have a direct role in the football program would undermine the credibility of the head coach, Butch Jones.
Are we already there, though?
Well, but it would solidify it, where the university would be saying de facto, okay, we don't believe in our head football coach, so we're going to hire a former head football coach to babysit him, hold his hand, look over his shoulders, and correct his grammar. And if that impression would be there, and it would be used by negative recruiters. And so I don't think Phil Fulmer could have any official role inside that football program. Now, to be like Steve Spurrier at Florida, which is to say ambassador, emeritus, super poobah, to show up and shake hands and et cetera, you know, that I think would be a good thing. But not, in my opinion, a specific role in dealing with the coaches or the players.
What do you think Spurrier's role is in Florida as far as, you know, do you think McElwain goes to him and says, hey, Steve, what do you think about this or what do you think about that? And Butch Jones has been on record saying, hey, when Coach Fulmer speaks, I listen. So I do feel like Butch would listen to Phil Fulmer if he came to him. And what do you think that relationship in a non-official capacity should be?
But see, like you just described, Jared, I mean, don't you think that if Butch Jones wants to run something by Fulmer, he would already do it? And I would think that McElwain would do the same thing with Spurrier. I mean, I don't know that they have that relationship, but you know, right now the relationship, the official relationship with Spurrier to Florida, is very much a goodwill ambassador kind of a thing. But if McElwain has a question or a problem or something that he wants to run by a guy that's been through the wars, certainly for more decades than McElwain has as a head coach, he'll pick up the phone and call him. I was talking to David Shaw at Stanford a couple of years ago, and he was talking about the future Hall of Fame and current Hall of Fame coaches of other sports that are in the building now, either currently coaching women's basketball or track or other things like that, or that have already retired but maintain an office in the athletic facility. And he said he's in there talking to those people all the time about kids, about recruiting, about mentoring, about, you know, different kinds of things that are common across sports. And I think that Butch Jones would do well to pick up the phone and talk to people like Phil Fulmer. I just don't think that the university needs to put him in an official position, Fulmer now, of being the official babysitter to the coach. That would be just the worst thing in the world.
I love it. I love the idea of it. Because I don't – the three people involved in UT football at that type of level would be Butch Jones, John Curry, the athletic director, and Phil Fulmer. And who do you trust the most of those three guys? To me, I trust Fulmer the most. By the way, I also love that David Shaw – the Stanford coach goes to the women's basketball coaches to get the insight there.
No, Tara Vanderveer.
Tara Vanderveer's the head coach. She's a Hall of Famer. And then they just hired this assistant from Belmont, Lindy LaRocque. She's going to be a Hall of Famer. So they got great coaches.
Jared on top of it all the way through. And the thing it is, when Shaw was talking about that, he didn't just sort of slip it out. He was actually saying in a very humble way, this woman and the other coaches that he had talked to in different sports helped me be better. And he was humble enough to give them that credit. But Tara Vanderveer is not an official head football coach babysitter capacity with a big chair and a computer in David Shaw's office. If that were the case, then, you know, the coach over there at Cal would be pointing that out to recruits.
The we've heard discussion about switching Auburn and Missouri forever, and that thing's popped back up, and, of course, Auburn is pushing it harder than ever, and I haven't heard anything from Missouri. I mean, they can't be thrilled about it, but I haven't heard anything. Do you have any idea where that all stands?
Well, I don't understand why anybody's even talking about it. It just seems silly. You know, I mean, if you go to a 16-team super conference, which I hate, I don't like 14-team conferences. I'm not crazy about 12-team conferences. But if they expand and then move them around, stuff like that, I think you're opening the door to a lot of problems. If they don't expand, I think it gets even worse, because which are the rivalries you'll get rid of? I mean, you put them in the West, they're always going to be playing Alabama, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But then that takes Tennessee away from Alabama. And then a whole bunch of other dominoes start to fall. And so I just don't see it. No, Missouri, you know, I don't think they have anything to say about it. I think they're thrilled to get their $30 million of SEC money. And you put us wherever you
play
want.
Wherever
we don't care.
You want.
Yeah, pay.
Yeah,
no, Missouri
else.
Wants, they didn't want no part of the West.
Yeah, by the way,
they shouldn't.
Missouri, by the way, I think will be the most exciting team in the SEC this year.
What?
I really do. Most exciting. Yep.
Well, go ahead, Trevor Maddich in studio with us. The floor is yours. Why do you
think
that?
Let's hear that one.
Listen, last year, they hired Josh Heupel to install the air raid on offense as offensive coordinator. And the offense became a statistical monster. And the defense, for a variety of reasons, became a statistical marshmallow. They got pushed around by everybody. Last year, Missouri scored 45 points against Middle Tennessee State and lost. They scored 37, I think, against the Tennessee Volunteers and lost by almost four touchdowns, right? Well, this year, I don't see the defense really improving much. But the offense has all the firepower back, and in the second year of the offense. So I see Missouri's offense going up and down the field. And Josh Heupel wants to go at an even faster tempo in 2017. That means faster touchdowns, faster punts, and probably less rest for the defense.
Absolutely.
So the other offense will go up and down the field like crazy too. So if your neck is healthy enough to go back and forth like you're watching a ping pong match for three straight hours, there's no place you'd rather be in Saturday afternoons in the fall than at the zoo. I'm telling you, it's going to be fun.
This is going to be one of those 70 to 71
right.
every week.
I'm not saying they're going to be a good football team, but I'm saying, man, there's going to be movement on that field.
See, that's where I guess you brought up the defense factor of it. And, well, I don't see their defense improving any much. Well, I'm not watching Big 12 football because I don't watch those Texas Tech 88-73 football. I'm not watching that.
Okay.
Not watchable for me. And if Missouri
so you don't
tries
so
to
you,
do that, they're
so you
get
haven't
the
watched
kicked.
Alabama Ole Miss for the last 3 years.
Alabama
because both
holds,
teams are scoring 30, 40 points a game.
Yeah, 30 and 40 are fine. 70, no.
Well, 70.
The Texas Tech, all that's I'm
and,
not
and
watching
by the
that.
Way, and by the way, your basketball on grass, Big 12 Missouri, don't take seriously, came into the SEC East and won the division their first 2 years in the conference. So much for the vaunted SEC defense.
Well,
they couldn't stop the Big
years,
12 either.
They did for 2 years in a row.
Okay,
speaking
well,
of the Big 12, what about Oklahoma?
What would Tara Vanderveer say about that? That's what I want
to know. I'm more worried about what Lindy LaRocque, the new one, would say.
You know something? I was out visiting Oklahoma, and I talked to Bob Stoops in his new office. I talked to offensive coordinator Lincoln Riley, and neither one of them made a peep that Stoops was going to retire.
And this was just before it happened?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks before it happened. Wow. Although I really think that the way they described it all happened really fast. But now that I think back on it, They're just now moving into their brand new facility, football facility. It's a $160 million overall facilities upgrade to include the stadium, and it is magnificent. I mean, unbelievable. And they were putting pictures up on the walls. There were construction guys in there. But Bob Stoops' office was pretty much all squared away, right? There were family pictures, everything else. I walked into Lincoln Riley's office, the offensive coordinator, and there was nothing in there. And I just passed it off as, well, gee, you know, he hasn't had time to be there. But maybe he had an idea that there was no need to unpack the family pictures because he was going to move down the hall. I don't know if that's true or not. Here's the thing about Oklahoma, though. Oklahoma, defensively, that I think they'll get a little better. I think some of the young guys last year took their lumps. I think they'll be better. Offensively, I think they'll be much better than people think. They'll have one of the best offensive lines in the country, one of the best quarterbacks. Running backs will be fine. Wide receivers will be fine. But you talk about in week two, the Oklahoma-Ohio State game. If you love old-school football, I mean old-school trenches football, Floyd, you'll love this.
That might be it.
That's the game, because Oklahoma will have one of the best offensive lines in the country. Ohio State might have the best defensive line in the country from a standpoint of the starting talent plus depth that goes back to Alabama from 2 years ago, right? Not last year. Last year, Alabama was unbelievable starting defensive line, but the depth wasn't as good as it's been. But 2 years ago, last year's starters – were the backups to guys that are in the NFL now, right? Ohio State looks to have that kind of defensive line this year to go up against that O-line from Oklahoma.
Wow.
Ooh, that's going to be some smash mouth going on in Columbus on September, I think it's 9th, right?
Trevor Maddich in studio with us. Coming up next, I ripped apart this VolQuest.com article that said that it was good that UT got no recruits. Or, excuse me, I shouldn't say that. It was good that Tennessee had a quiet orange carpet day, I guess is the way to put it. I think that that's a little off the wall. Floyd, I think you kind of seem to think that it was a little kooky to think as much.
Yeah.
But Trevor has a take on it, and we will get to that next. It is Jared and the GM, live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. I said I was going to give something away, and I am a man of my word. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets to the Music City Fit Expo at Rocket Town on Saturday, July 15th. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 1025, The Game. Jared and the GM, Trevor Maddich in studio with us. Don't miss the National Predators Foundation annual craft beer festival presented by Orca Coolers June 24th. That's Saturday from 3 to 7 at Bridgestone Arena. General admission, $69 now, $79 day of the event. Okay, Trevor, so VolQuest.com writes an article. The Vols last year had 7 commitments, 4 of whom enrolled at UT on Orange Carpet Day. And this year they got none. Now, I said, I don't know how you can spin that in a positive light. And yet you seem to think you have a take on this, so I will just leave the floor open to you on UT football.
Well, you think it's ridiculous that they had a failure of a day because they had no commitments that day.
I didn't say that. I think that you would want to have people committed, but I just think it's ridiculous that you're going to write an article and try to tell me that it's okay, that it's a good thing that they didn't get any commitments when I'm not willing to go that
far. So you're saying it's a bad thing that they didn't get any commitments?
I'm saying that it's definitely not a good thing. Now, it doesn't make it a bad thing.
Well, so you're saying that it's not a bad thing that they didn't get any commitments, and yet you're ripping up the article.
Yeah, the article says that it's a good thing. It's not a good thing that they got no commitments.
So what we're debating is the distinction between a good thing and not a bad thing.
Yes.
Okay. Let me tell you why I think it's fine. It's no big deal at all. I'm actually more concerned that they had 7 commitments last year. That bothers me more than having no commitments this year.
Why?
Because recruiting is a relationship. It's a long-term relationship. It's not up to the moment that you get a commitment. That commitment can go away in a flash. And I think that there was good feedback from some of the players, high school players, recruits that went to this year's Orange Carpet Day, right? They said that they enjoyed being there. They didn't feel pressured. It was just a good experience. That's part of the process. What you don't want to have happen is that thing morph into a commitment fest where coaches are trying to get that commitment because we had 7 last year. We got to get at least 7 this year. It'll be a failure and you're pushing kids. The problem with that is that word will get out amongst high school coaches, amongst recruits, and negative recruiters. That if you're a top recruit, you do not want to go to that event at the University of Tennessee because all they will try to do is push you into commitment, whether you're ready or not, because they see you as a number on their sheet to check the box. And you can't have it be that way. And so the fact that there were seven the year before and only four came, I don't know if that's because they were those seven were really committed or because the coaches really pushed them. I know this year, the vibe that I've gotten from it is that they weren't pushing at all. They were maintaining the relationship. And from all accounts, it sounded like it was a good experience for those recruits, which sets up the next experience. And it takes away the threat of that event being seen by recruits as, if you show up here, that's all they're going to try to do is push you into a commitment. That would be an ultimate nightmare. And that's why I think it is perfectly fine that they had zero commits.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a good thing.
But it's not a bad thing.
I mean, I certainly don't think it's – I mean, if you had to have me pick, is it good or bad, I'm going to say I'm going to lean bad. I think I would go on that route. Trevor Maddich in studio with us.
Did they – let me ask you this. Do you have any concern over getting those commitments and then the school turning around and have to withdraw those scholarships?
Well, welcome to the SEC.
Is that part of
– that's I
is
hate,
that part of the giant commitment?
I hate that. Yeah. I hate it that school, and the SEC has perfected this where they'll oversign, they'll overcommit. Right. And then if they got their three-star guy that they kind of like as a backdrop, he commits because he's thrilled to be able to go to this big SEC school. And then the four-star guy makes a decision a month later, and that three-star guy gets pushed aside, right? And or even be signed. There are all kinds of things that happen in there even after signing that I just don't like. And so I am not going to defend that concept. But I will say that that's one of the reasons that one of the things that people who want to do away with the signing day altogether, I think there's an advantage there because if you make an offer to a kid and the kid says, okay, I'll sign today. And you say, no, we just want to keep you on the line here. We don't want to sign you yet. Well, he knows you're not serious about him, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think what you're talking about there, Floyd, is just a good argument to do away with the signing day altogether.
Trevor Maddich in studio with us. Here's what I want to do. This is going to sound crazy, but there's so much to get to. I walked out of the studio during the break, and you two guys were just going on about football and all the different tour stops you've made and the different conferences you were breaking down. So I literally just want to give you the floor for some of the things that you've been noticing and seeing because it's all very fascinating, and I don't want to waste the best part of your visit being what you and Floyd talked about during the break.
Well, you know what? There's been a lot of fun going on, and there's been some other stuff too. But I've kind of already started part of my tour, and so I've hit different places based on what I've needed to do, and it will continue on. There's a lot more to do. Starting on what month is it now? July 1st, which is, I think, the first Saturday in July, on SportsCenter morning, so like 10 to noon, that kind of thing. Every Saturday in July, I'll be going on for a couple of hits to talk about kind of what's been going on. Some of the coaches I've already talked to, most of them I'll be talking to later. But there's a couple of things that really stand out. One of them is the Pac-12 is going to be really hard to win. There are so many teams that can win that conference. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, USC is all that. Washington, I don't think, is going to miss a beat, even though they lost three starting defensive backs to the NFL in the first, like, 42 picks. Washington State will be better than last year, and last year they won eight games. Stanford, I think, has a chance to be better than they were last year, even though they lost Christian McCaffrey because of experience in the offensive line and quarterback and some other places. Oregon, I think, is going to make a big jump back from only winning four games last year, but they had so many freshmen. Four of their five starting offensive linemen and their starting quarterback were freshmen. Their best defensive players were freshmen. Well, those guys are sophomores now. Oregon is not far away from clawing back towards the top of that. So I think the Pac-12 is going to be a really hard league to win, and I wouldn't pencil USC in just yet.
You know what my weird take with USC is? Because I kind of have penciled them in. I believe that if Tennessee struggles, like if UT goes 7-5 or, you know, worse, and UT's looking for a new football coach, if USC has a good year, I think UT fans will want T. Martin to be the next head coach at UT.
Yep.
Because T's their guy, and Sam Darnold's going to be great, and it's, hey, he's a great coordinator of a great team, and he's our guy.
Yep, and I actually talked to T. Martin about that. Actually, the last 2 years, I've talked to T. Martin about that.
What's T. say?
Well, he told me exactly what the plan is for the University of Tennessee. And no, actually, he didn't tell me that because he respects that there's a coach here now. So he wasn't talking any kind of specifics. He understands that part of the game. But he told me that he does want to be a head coach, that he has been grooming to be a head coach, that he's been learning from some of the coaches that he has been on their staff, and trying to learn not just the nuances of being a coordinator, but how do you do this whole thing? And one thing that's really good, or could be good, for T. Martin, should there be a coaching change at Tennessee? And remember, Tennessee's got a head football coach, right? So the job's not open. But if it does become open, then you're talking about a guy who's never become a head coach jumping into the SEC hotbed for his first job, right?
Right.
But take a look at what's happened at Oklahoma. Bob Stoops was there for 18 years. He all of a sudden, in a flurry of realization, decides he wants to retire. And 33-year-old offensive coordinator Lincoln Riley is elevated to head coach of Oklahoma without having been a head coach anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If he does well at Oklahoma, then I think that would give a school like a UT an opportunity to say, look, if it worked there, it can work with this other guy too. Let's interview him and see if he's got the goods. So I think the success of Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma is important if T. Martin wants to jump into a head coaching job at a Power 5 conference and not just, you know, go to a smaller school first and work his way up.
Trevor Maddich, as always, it is good to see you, and we look forward to everything leading up to football season. And, of course, once football season comes, there is no better than Mr. Trevor Maddich, who joins us on Tuesdays. Trev, good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Trev.